Hello and welcome to Behind the Headlines, a place where we take a longer look at stories making our bulletins today and the stories our reporters have been out and about covering right across the country today. Well, first, and we start with 9/11, and events have been taking place in the UK and the US 25 years on from the 9/11 attacks. It's hard to believe it was 25 years ago. I can remember seeing it all unfold on TV. Well, we've been at events all over the country and speaking to survivors too. And I'll start the podcast with one of those, Paul Beriff, who now lives in Yorkshire. He filmed the South Tower collapsing and was caught in the resulting cloud of concrete. He's been telling our chief reporter, Katie Lyons, about what he remembers.
First of all, take me back to 25 years ago. I'm really sorry to have to take you back because, you know, a very, very traumatic time. But you captured things, didn't you?
I was in New York with a film crew from the UK. We were making a television series for the Discovery Channel in the USA. We saw that both the Twin Towers were on fire. So we knew then that it wasn't a light aircraft, and obviously it was obviously something more serious with both towers burning. And as we got nearer, we could see all these black dots appearing around the towers, and we wondered what it was. And as we got closer, we could see the black dots were actually people jumping from the different levels. So we knew then it was obviously very serious. So we've been filming about 20 minutes, and there's loud explosion behind me, and I turned around with the camera was running to look up at the South Tower and just to see the top of the building peeling away. It was like a large umbrella opening up, and the building was starting to collapse. So I started to film all this. Well, I was continuing filming it, and I could hear the firefighters shouting, run, run, run. The camera was pointing over my left shoulder. I kept it rolling so it could see what was happening. I couldn't see, but I could hear it, this terrific avalanche of metal and concrete hurling towards us. So we're running down the street. We've been running for about 3 or 4 seconds. And the next thing I remember was the camera leaving my hand in slow motion and everything goes black. All I remember then was crawling, and I thought that was instantly, but apparently I'd been knocked unconscious for about 30 minutes. I was lying there when the North Tower apparently had come down on me as well. So I come to 30 minutes later. Everything's pitch black. I've never seen blackness like it. I could hardly breathe. My mouth was full of gunge because all the dust cloud from the collapse was still circling the area. Stuff I touch is burning, really hot. My clothes are all hot, but I keep going. I'm still clearing my mouth at the same time, still pitch black. And I'd feel one car come to two cars and then the third car. And I run my hand down the side of this car, and I feel this person, and I identify another. It's still black, as a fireman's tunic. So I shout across, "Can I use your air bottle? Can I use your air bottle?" And no reply. So I presume he was one of the first firefighters that were killed, literally seeing the top of the building coming down towards me.
How important is it for you, for people to still talk about 9/11 and remember those emergency service people who died, you know, people who just went to work that day and never made it home to their families?
I think people should remember it. I know several people have said, oh, we should forget about it. Well, no, it's been the greatest event of our lifetime and one of the greatest events since the Second World War. You shouldn't forget it.
Well, as I mentioned, memorial services have been held right across the world to mark 25 years since 9/11. Our senior reporter, Claire Bode, was at a memorial event at Olympic Park in East London today.
This morning's ceremony took place in the shadow of a statue made of steel beams recovered from the Twin Towers. Many shared their memories of where they were the moment they heard the first plane had crashed into the North Tower. I spoke to Liam McKenna, whose aunt and uncle were in the South Tower at the time and whom both died that day.
So my uncle, Michael Egan, he was a senior executive at Aon. He worked in the South Tower. His sister, my aunt Christine, didn't live in New York. She didn't work there. She'd simply gone in to visit him that day. It was just a tragic one-off that ended in the worst possible way.
The Prime Minister, Andy Burnham, sent this message to the memorial.
On this anniversary, we must remember that hatred and fear did not have the last word on 9/11. The terrorists sought to weaken and divide America and everyone who believes in the values our countries share. But our response was clear. Those who seek to destroy our way of life will never win.
Well, the key message from everyone was the same. The causes, impacts and lessons of that awful day must never be forgotten.
Whilst in the South Coast, our reporter Freya Taylor's been at service in Southsea.
As the world remembers the 9/11 terror attacks, the Portsmouth community and emergency services have gathered here in Southsea. Councillor Darren Sanders is telling us why it's so important.
We need to say to everyone that we stand together. We need to say that we believe in hope over division. We believe in peace over war, and that we will not give in to terrorism.
Some firefighters have chosen to honour those in the service by climbing 110 stairs in full firefighting kit out in Atlanta. Gary Vaughan's from Hampshire's service and took part.
Some of them were there on that day. That was quite hard and quite an honour to stand shoulder to shoulder with them. And others had dads, uncles at the Twin Towers on that day.
Those gathered today say they agree the events and impacts of that day cannot and will not be forgotten.
Well, as we've been remembering the 9/11 terror attacks, we've been at events across the country where people have been remembering that day 25 years ago. In Scotland, Lana Mackay was at a memorial service in Edinburgh.
From Scotland originally, we were living in America, and I remember exactly where I was when the first plane hit the World Trade Center, and I was driving to work and I heard it on the radio, and it's had an impact on, I think, everyone ever since.
It's a time to remember and be grateful you didn't die that day, and feel something for all the families who've lost somebody and the people who didn't make it home.
I'm Lana Mackay outside St Giles Cathedral, where around 250 people, including the First Minister, came to pay their respects and remember loved ones, survivors and first responders affected by the tragedy. John Swinney and Edinburgh Lord Provost Robert Aldridge tied ribbons of remembrance to a fig tree as part of the poignant service marking 25 years of the 9/11 terror attacks.
And we head to Northern Ireland, where Emily Brown tells us how firefighters in Belfast have been marking 9/11.
Firefighters from Newtownards and Cumber climbed 2,200 steps today, the equivalent of 130 floors, to commemorate the events of 9/11. And if that wasn't tough enough, they were dressed in full structural PPE whilst carrying heavy breathing gear, honouring the actions of those 343 New York Fire Department who lost their lives. Ian Emerson is Station Commander for Response and Resilience in NI, and he tells us the importance of remembering the event on its 25th anniversary.
Everybody remembers where they were on 9/11. From our point of view, the firefighters walking in to those towers, climbing so many floors to try and do their duty, save and rescue people. So to commemorate that is incredibly important for us and to show respect across the world over to New York.
I spoke to one of the crew, Matthew McMahon, about why he's taken part.
Just that they're brave heroes, and what they've did is a sacrifice that they played the ultimate sacrifice for it. And every day that we turn out that call, we don't know what we're turning up to, you know, and those brave firefighters at that time paid the ultimate sacrifice to put other people ahead of themselves.
He said the challenge acted as a physical reminder of the bravery displayed by those who ran towards danger while others fled.
Well, now we move on to a political story from today, and an assisted dying bill has been voted down by MPs this afternoon by a margin of 16 votes. It's despite a near identical version of the bill being voted through by the Commons earlier in the year. Our political correspondent, Tom Claiborne.
We now come to the Terminally Ill Adults End of Life Bill.
These plans were back on the table thanks to a private members bill by Kent MP Lauren Edwards.
That will give dying adults, under very stringent criteria, choice, autonomy and dignity at the end of their lives.
Yeah. She told the Commons today's debate goes well beyond the topic at hand.
Who ultimately decides the laws that govern our nations? Yeah. Many members would no doubt prefer to be working in their constituencies today. They are not because a small number of peers in the other place chose to prevent any votes taking place on the substance of that bill.
MPs got a free vote on this as it's an ethical issue and for individual consciences rather than political parties. The bill wanted to allow adults in England and Wales with fewer than 6 months to live with a chance to end their own lives if this was approved by two doctors and an expert panel. But West Lancashire MP Ashley Dalton, who has terminal cancer, says the protections on offer here don't go far enough.
This is not a last chance saloon. This debate has been going on for years. It's not a once-in-a-generation opportunity. It could come back again at the next Parliament. My days may be numbered, but that doesn't mean that I want this chamber to rush through bad law just so I might have a chance to see it or use it. It's of huge importance.
Supporters of it say this matter should be a personal one. Opponents say palliative care should be improved instead.
We move on to something completely different now, and here's something to shout about. Scottish legend Lulu has received a blue plaque on Glasgow's first ever Music Heritage Trail. The new project's placing 10 of the plaques at venues of musical significance across the city. Lulu was the first to be honoured in a ceremony last night. Before an impromptu sing-along, she sat down with our reporter Liv Thompson.
How significant is this moment for you, you know, getting a plaque on this heritage trail?
To have a blue plaque is not something a wee lassie fae Deniston ever imagines is going to happen to her. So it's sort of mind-blowing in a way. But I do think when I can get over my own self, there are so many amazing musicians that will be recognised in that way. I think this heritage trail is just a stroke of genius because Glasgow particularly, I mean, I know the great musicians throughout Scotland, but Glasgow, obviously, I know that it's like in my blood music, and it's in my Scottish blood, and it's in the roots that I come from, and it's all Glasgow, mental for music.
I'm only a common old working girl, as anyone here can see. But when I get a couple of drinks on a Saturday, Glasgow belongs to me.
And finally, I mean for me, Saturday night telly is Gladiators. Now, Alex Grey, who's known as Apollo in TV show Gladiators, has been telling us that he hopes to inspire as he tries theatre acting for the first time. The ex-rugby and NFL player will be appearing in Snow White in the Princess Theatre in Torquay. He's told our chief reporter, Andrew Kay, he can't encourage youngsters to try something new if he won't.
So to begin with, you've never done this before.
I have done absolutely zero theatre in the background. Would you class The Gladiators as theatrical? I'm not sure. There's an element to it, but is it something I'm interested in? Yes. Do I have ambitions to explore acting and entertainment outside of The Gladiators? Yes, of course. And I kind of see this as like a first step on the rung as an experience, as a gateway to that. You know, I'm really excited to get involved and just keep branching out.
And when you signed up for the TV show, did you realise you would become such a role model?
It's the most amazing part of it for me, and I didn't really realise it was going to be when I first signed up. You know, obviously the idea of putting on a sparkly spandex onesie and having a costume and walkout music and beating up your local butcher and physio or PT on a Saturday night was a really exciting prospect. But to see the impact that we've had on families and children up and down the country, and grown-ups as well, is, you know, being able to give them that little bit of inspiration, because, you know, our show is based on David versus Goliath. It's about being a good sport. It's about, you know, when you get knocked down, getting back up and trying your best, you know, no matter win or lose. And to be able to instill that in a nation has been really cool. And we're so well supported, right? So we just want to keep doing the best job we can. But I do see it as a big part of what we do, if not the biggest, because you don't get a lot of opportunities to do that. And I think we have to make the most of it.
For more on these stories, head to the news pages of our website or check out our social media channels, and come back again tomorrow when we'll continue to take you behind the headlines.